Welcome back to another episode of Tales from the Bunk Bed, a bi-weekly-ish pop culture and entertainment podcast where we dig into all the great stuff that kept us entertained as kids. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm Lucas.
And here's what we have in store for you guys this week. It's the Winter Olympics. This Friday is opening ceremonies for the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, I think is
South Korea.
South Korea. Other side of the world, so it's all going to be happening in early morning. Watching a lot of replays.
Yep.
But to celebrate this week and next week, the next two shows, we are going to be covering our favorite instances of the Winter Games on film. This is a lighter episode. We've been crunched for time recently, and I know it seems like a while since we've gotten an episode out to you, but if you've been following it all, I had a little bit of a boner and lost our snow day episode, unfortunately. It was a good episode, too.
Yeah, that was a fun one, but we'll touch back on it probably next year.
Yeah, we'll revisit again next winter. We had a good conversation, though. It was a bummer we lost it, so that's why it's been so long since we've gotten an episode out. And we were going to get one out even earlier about one of the movies we're going to talk about today, but then we decided it would make a better episode if we waited to see this other movie. And kind of talk about how one feeds off the other.
Yes.
But next week, because we're going to do, this is another thing, the next 3 weeks we're going to try to have an episode every week. We have three things lined up, and we're going to try and go 3 weeks in a row to catch kind of back up and then go back to our bi-weekly thing. So we're doing some Olympic stuff this week, quick little episode. We're going to have a big Winter Olympics episode coming out next week. Just going to cover a whole bunch of stuff that we love.
Yep.
And it's not only movies, mostly movies, but there's mostly one or two other things in there that, that'll be fun to chat about. And then after that, we have a cool little episode we'll keep under wraps at least for a little while longer that, should be a nice little mixture of different kinds of media and entertainment that we'll be talking about. Something we've been talking about trying since we started this, like a different kind of topic, that's going to, should have some cool and interesting conversation, even if it's something you guys aren't into or know about.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little teaser for that. Before we get into the Olympic stuff this week, we don't really have much in current events. I was going to talk a little about Cloverfield, but I'm going to be talking about that on my other podcast, The Breakdown, this week, a lot more in depth. So it's on Netflix. You can go watch it right now, and that's all I'll say. But I wanted to talk about one movie that just dropped on VOD this week that you can rent on like Vudu, iTunes, Amazon. A little horror movie called Tragedy Girls. I've been hearing about this one since like festival time last year, probably like midsummer. And summer it started playing some festivals. And it sounded really cool. A lot of people were calling it like the Mean Girls of slasher movies.
Okay.
Because it's dealing with two high school teenagers who are like, they're sociopaths, they're serial killer obsessed, and they are all about like internet fame. They have this account on Twitter called Tragedy Girls that they like report on active serial killers and stuff like that. And in reality, they are two young sociopaths trying to become the next great serial killers.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's a very tongue-in-cheek satirical, horror movie that plays with a lot of like today's, like the tropes of today's youth while interjecting it with all of our favorite slasher horror tropes.
Did you see this? Sounds very interesting.
I rented it the other day. It's great. It's super fun. It's funny because it's more like, it's not like a dark, hard to watch movie. It gets the kills are great. And actually, Craig Robinson is not only a producer, he's in it.
Oh,
and he's
okay.
Great in it. I'm actually mad I forgot to tell you to watch it when it was rented, because when I was watching it and he popped up, I was like, oh, Lucas is going to love this movie. It's got a bunch of fun little cameos in it. The two girls that play the lead, Brianna Hildebrand and Alexandra Shipp, are so good. They're great little sociopaths. Kevin Durand is in it. It's a cool little movie with a surprisingly good cast. And, you know, it takes, there's been so many slasher movies over the years.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones that it doesn't reinvent the genre, but it finds a way to play with it and have fun with it that somehow no one else has really tapped into in a way like this. It's fun. It's another movie that came out last year that if anyone wants to watch is on Hulu right now, Ingrid Goes West, which is all about Aubrey Plaza as like this psycho who stalks people from Instagram.
Uh-huh.
This is kind of like the slasher version of that, because that's like a black comedy about like how people interact with social media and stuff, especially unstable people. And that's what this is doing, just in a bloody funny slasher version of it. It's great. It's a lot of fun. I can't wait for that one to actually hit Blu-ray so I can get myself a copy of that.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. I'm going to have to give that a watch.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, I kept hearing about it out of festivals, probably right around Halloween time, and I was super bummed that it wasn't getting picked up anytime. Like, there was no news about when it was going to get released and all that, so when I found out it was coming out, it came out on the 2nd, I watched it that night because it sounds great, and it was great. So yeah, check out Tragedy Girls if that sounds like something that interests you. Okay, so this is going to be a quicker episode. We're only going to talk about two movies now, but both are great, and both we should have a decent amount to say on. And one of them we just saw on Monday, and that's the first movie we're going to talk about, which is also, you may be hearing the name a lot because it's gotten Oscar nominations, and is being talked about as one of the better movies from last year. That is I, Tanya.
The haters always say, Tanya, tell the truth. Tanya. There's no such thing as truth. Everyone has their own truth.
I was the best figure skater in the world at one point in time.
You call that a clean skate, for Christ's sake?
Do not swear in front of the kids.
I didn't swear, you cunt.
Who's that?
You two fuck yet?
We need to see a wholesome American family.
I don't have a wholesome American family.
You skated like a graceless bull dyke.
I was embarrassed for you.
My entire life, I've been told I wouldn't amount to anything. You know what? Maybe I would.
The biography, comedy, drama, I guess, that is centering on the life of Tanya Harding, and more specifically, anyone who knows the story of Tanya Harding is assuming a specific incident where they attacked Nancy Kerrigan. Yeah, it's the famous Tanya Harding Nancy Kerrigan incident, shown from Tanya Harding's point of view. But it's not just that. That's obviously where this movie is leading, but it is an entire biography of her life. And the Tanya Harding is played by Margot Robbie, who's incredible in the movie.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yep. Sebastian Stan plays Jeff Gillooly. I don't even know how to pronounce
it. Gillooly.
Gillooly, there we go.
Yeah.
I kept forgetting his name throughout the movie. But
so did I.
That being said, Sebastian Stan is very good in that role. Allison Janney as Tanya's mother, Levana Golden, who she is also nominated for Best Supporting Actress, deservedly so. She's great in this movie.
Yeah, fantastic.
God, she's a piece of shit. Juliana Nicholson as the coach, Diane Rawlison. Someone, and I've been seeing this a lot on the internet recently, and I finally understand why. Paul Walter Hauser as Sean is someone that people are saying should have gotten a Best Supporting Actor nomination. The Bodyguard.
Yeah. He was pretty great.
Holy, dude, that's a great performance. Yeah. Like, he's doing some things, man, and it all works. Yeah, he's a big source of comic relief in this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
You get Bobby Cannavale as Martin Maddox, who was one of the main reporters covering the event. And it follows Tanya Harding from when she was a little kid up until the incident. It briefly covers the early years. My favorite part of this movie is it does the Dewey Cox thing. Have you seen? You've seen,
yes,
Walk Hard, right?
Walk,
yeah, of course
Hard.
You've seen Walk Hard. Does the Dewey Cox things when they're showing young Tanya Harding and young Jeff? They are played by Margot Robbie and Sebastian Stan. So it's a bunch of like late 20, early 30-year-olds playing 15, 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
Just like when John C. Reilly's playing a young Dewey Cox at the beginning of Walk the Line. He's like, I'm 15 years old. And she literally says that at one point. Like, yeah. It kind of feels like an intentional callback to that, honestly. But it's really fun, and it really sets the tone of the movie pretty early on of what you're getting into. The movie's been called the Goodfellas of biopics, which, I mean, Goodfellas is a biopic, but it's like the Goodfellas sports biopic, I guess, because the way it's told is you have, in the beginning of the movie, they sit you down with present day Tonya Harding, her mother, and Jeff. And it's take, because apparently this happened, they got all of their sides of the story, and it says it right out the gate. The movie's based on all of their stories, which are wildly contradictory to each other, telling you right out the gate that nothing in this movie can really be substantiated. Like, there's the evidence, like there's the pure fact of the story, and then there's the gaps they're filling in here that are all just their takes on the story, which don't line up with each other's very much.
No, no, not at all.
So I don't know. It's got a little bit of an edge to it. It plays it with, like, what I would compare it most, like, everyone's calling it closer to Goodfellas. I would compare it more closely to Pain and Gain in the way of it's telling an absurd story about a bunch of really dumb, bad people.
Yeah.
And it's almost so unbelievable at times that the movie has to remind you in the middle of it that this is, this is based in fact. In Pain and Gain, it literally does that with a caption reminding you of it. And this, it's kind of the scene where Bobby Cannavale's character literally says to you that everyone in this story is a boob. Like, he calls everyone involved in this a boob. Like, telling you, reminding you, these are all dumb, awful people. Like, they suck. don't start rooting for them, because they do not deserve to be rooted for.
You feel the most sympathy for Tonya Harding. And
even so,
she's
not a good person.
No, not a good person. Very stupid.
Yes. The movie makes you sympathize with her about the incident, like how it all went down, and if her getting kicked out of figure skating was necessarily fair. And, like, it gives you some sympathy. But, which is the brilliance of them having, like, the present-day versions of them being, like, cutting back throughout the movie, like, because it's them doing the voiceover and telling – it's Tonya Harding doing the voiceover and telling the story. And almost every time you get to something that makes her look bad – she has an excuse for why it isn't her fault. Every time. Literally every time. From the beginning to the end of the movie, when she does something bad, whether it's her just falling or actually doing something really bad, she has an excuse for it. And she's like, so it's not my fault. You see? It's not my fault.
And there's other parts like that where they kind of break the fourth wall, where, like, the one scene where she apparently pulls out a shotgun and shoots at Jeff. In the middle of that scene, she turns to the camera and says, I never did this. So, that's another thing where you could see they're telling contradicting stories.
Yep.
But it's funny to see them break the fourth wall so frequently.
Yeah, because, I mean, the three of these people, the mom, Tonya, and Jeff, are such bad people that every time they cut back to the older versions of themselves, it's basically to be like, that didn't happen. Or, especially with the mother, played by Allison Janney, it was either that didn't happen, or is that really that bad? Like, I made her tough as nails. Go fuck yourself, basically, is what she's saying. Like, she is the most unapologetic, I like.
The one part that made me laugh is when they first start telling how Tonya and Jeff got married, and it cuts to the mom, and she goes, and this is where I get cut out.
Yep. Which is funny, because they comes back to it a little later, and she goes, where the fuck have I been for most of this movie? As you said, it breaks the fourth wall, which is a tough thing to accomplish. It can be, exactly. Obviously, you can do it, but it doesn't always work. But when it does, it's always remembered. Ferris Bueller, Deadpool, this movie's being, people love it. It's got like a 90% Rotten Tomatoes score. It's directed by Craig Gillespie. The name doesn't ring any bells, but let's see if he's done anything else. He did Lars and the Real Girl, which was that weird movie with Ryan Gosling and a sex doll. Finest Hours, which was that other movie I didn't see about those boaters in the storm. Million Dollar Arm, which is another movie I didn't see. Ooh. He did the Fright Night remake. Okay. I love the Fright Night remake. The Fright Night remake is fantastic. All right. There's some talent here. I like this Craig Gillespie guy, but he did a really good job directing it with the Steve Rogers script. that it takes a different, because we see like 5 biopics a year, especially there's sports biopics all the time.
Oh, frequently.
And they may be good, but they're usually cookie cutter, and that's why you don't always hear about them. Like, they're never really bad. No. But few of them rise to greatness. Like, you either have to have the perfect story or have a cool angle on it for that to happen. Something like a Friday Night Lights, where they lose, you know, and it's about, like, there's a cool angle to that story, and it's like, I had all their personal lives involved into it. Like, find an interesting way to make these biopics where it's not just telling their story. Like, they did a James Brown biopic a few years back that people said was good. It just, I mean, it's giving you the basic history that everybody knows. The story, if you go to Wikipedia, you're going to read it all right there.
That's what you're going to find.
And what I like about this, I mean, one, we weren't, I mean, I know you, I think we talked about this, we weren't familiar with this incident going in.
No,
like, I
absolutely
knew
not.
There was a Tonya Harding incident with Nance Kerrigan, especially now with the movie out, everyone's talking about it.
What was this, like 94 was when 94, this happened?
So I was 3.
And I was 2 years away from being born.
Yes.
So.
I'm sure if we talked about to our mom about this, she'd have a lot to say, because our mom loves figure skating. So she probably has opinions about this. And she probably does not like Nance.
2 days ago, when she had figure skating on. But yeah, I guarantee you, if we said something, asked her about it, she'd have some opinions on it.
Yeah, she's part of that fan base that is why Tonya Harding had such a hard time breaking through, because she was considered, in their eyes, trash. Which is, and that's what is interesting about this biopic. It is not apologizing for what she did. It is not apologizing for her being a bad person. It's not trying to make you like her. It's showing you why she is the way she is, and that there is some sympathy here, because she isn't just a person. She isn't like your average figure skater who had everything handed to her, was this rich, pampered girl who just decided to be the bad girl of ice skating. This is a girl who came, she was trailer trash, basically.
Yeah.
And was, is still is to this day. She's the same, and she is proud of it. They have Margot Robbie's character say it at one point in the movie. She calls it, like, proudly calls herself redneck.
Yeah.
That's who she is, and she had a tough time actually winning competition early on, because she didn't have money to buy the expensive costumes.
So she'd make them herself, and they would not look great, obviously.
Yeah, she would dance to rock music like ZZ Top and stuff like that, which they didn't like.
Yep.
And she had an attitude about her. But she, which the movie, one of my favorite things in the earlier parts of the movie is she knows she can land the triple axel, so she's always pissed off because she knows she's going to be one of the best, but they won't accept her just because of where she comes from and like her personality. But she knows she's one of the best skaters, and then when she does land the triple axel, she knows she is the best skater.
It's funny because it's prejudice inside of your own race, because everybody in the story is white in the first half at least, and they're all just, oh no, she's coming from poor neighborhood, she doesn't belong here, she's not one of us. They're basically calling this girl an outsider just because she grew up poor.
Yeah, and what I think is one of the most interesting parts of the story of the movie is everything that happened that she did is bad, and she's terrible for doing it, but it's about how everything around her also, like, led her directly to that. Like, it, including, and very much so, the U.S. Olympic Figure Skating Organization.
Yes.
And their treatment of her. Like, they just would not give her a break, and she wouldn't stop trying, and she, I mean, eventually she broke, the people around her broke. And I do like that they make a point to include that in this movie, that it is, there was a lot about this, because the Olympic organization is just pretty much any major sports organization, corrupt as shit.
I mean, we got a prime example of it this year with the gymnastics thing.
Yeah.
How they were, it was reported and not.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The whole Nassar thing. Yeah. Horrifying. Like, so, yeah. Clearly, the Olympic organizations are nothing to tip your hat at. They are some shitty people.
Yes.
So, this movie is not afraid to point that out. Like, there's the great confrontation with her and the one judge where he gets real with her. He's like, look, if anyone asked, I didn't say this. And he just lays it out.
Yep.
Basically, that they're a bunch of assholes who don't want to let anyone who isn't like them into the sport.
Yeah, he was like, maybe if you would have just played along.
Yep.
That's literally what he says. If you would have just played along, you would get the scores.
Yeah, play the game is basically like that. And as she says, why can't it just be about the skating? I'm the best skater, and you guys don't care because of other outside factors that don't matter. it's I do like that. I did. The voiceover is a nice touch, leading you along in the story.
Yeah. No. They do a good job with that. Basically, every time you hear Margot Robbie as Tonya Harding come over, it's always something. It's usually something that will make you laugh or something. I found myself laughing quite a bit during this movie.
Very, very entertaining.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's that fun spin on doing either a biopic or a nonfiction story, similar to The Big Short.
Yep.
Taking something serious.
It reminded me a lot of The Big Short.
I mean, fourth wall breaking.
Yes.
Margot Robbie, fourth wall breaking. and I mean, let's talk about her for a second. She is so good as Tonya Harding.
Fantastic.
Incredible. From her playing the teenage version of it to the 20-year-old version of it to the 50-year-old version of it. It's probably especially the present-day version of her.
Because
obviously Margot Robbie's like late 20s, I think, maybe 30.
Yeah, she's young.
She's young, and they make good makeup.
They dress her up. Her
old, and but it's her acting that sells it. She crushes it, and she's super believable in every moment of this movie. Totally owns the part. I was gonna say too. They not only do they make a story about figure skating interesting,
yes,
which probably seems like a Herculean task in and of itself. They make the skating scenes very entertaining and like intense to watch.
Yeah.
Like the shooting style of it is it really centers you in and zones you in on what's going on, and you're like watching her every move. Because you, especially early on, because that's when they do a lot of actually showing the competitions.
The competitions.
When you know the triple axel is going to start coming, like you're kind of watching, being like, wait, so is it going to be this one? Is it coming here? Where is it coming? And you're kind of just like watching. And it's pretty intense and really engaging, like sports action and scenes.
They have the announcers doing like the narration, and they're like, oh, here she's going to start doing her backward skating, and that's going to, it's the whole thing that builds up the anticipation of this whole, like, scene on the ice.
Yeah, and they just do a really good job of taking something that you wouldn't expect to be interested in at all and make it really entertaining to watch.
Yeah, makes you glad they did it from, like you said previously to me, they did this perspective from Tonya Harding and not from Nancy Kerrigan.
Yes, yeah, so I wanted just to address this briefly because not that it's any sort of controversy, but when the movie first started coming around, there were some people, and most of them I know had not seen it yet, as is usually the case with people bitching on the interwebs, saying, oh man, shouldn't we be telling the story of Nancy Kerrigan instead? A few things. One, go look up the difference in net worth between Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding. One is worth over $1 million. One is worth less than I make a year. take a guess which is which. One came from a pampered rich lifestyle who's been training as a figure skater since they were born and had no real interesting thing happen in their life. And one of them came from Trailer Trash and somehow became the greatest figure skater in the world.
And then is currently still working as a waitress.
Yes. So which story is more interesting to tell there? Even without the incident. Which one's more story? And then, so here's the other thing, which is more interesting. The story of how someone like that came to the point where they were willing to do something as shady as that attack, or the person who just happened to get attacked while leaving practice one day, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing to her story. Like, I get the sentiment there that, oh, should we be glorifying bad people? But this is doing exactly what Wolf of Wall Street is doing. And it's having the same reaction. There's the same effect happening amongst audiences as with that movie, where there are some people thinking this is glorifying everything they do, just like there were some people who thought Wolf of Wall Street was glorifying everything they do, to which I say, if this is glory, like if this looks glorifying to you, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Especially more so in Wolf of Wall Street. But this, I mean, nothing they do looks good. She's getting beaten by her husband. They're planning shady shit. They're always poor. They
don't live good lifestyle.
No,
like,
drinking problems.
This is not glory.
No, there's nothing glorious in this movie. And it's telling the story, a very interesting story of how a person came to do bad things and came to be a bad person, because it's the perfect story to show that, because all the steps are there and it's super interesting. And I am very intrigued at why the best figure skater in the world would think to have something like that happen to Nancy Kerrigan. Like, it's crazy. How does that happen? How, like, is it paranoia? What is it? So to see the whole story, I mean, and I've been, the only thing I didn't get to do before we talked is I wanted to do a little bit of fact checking to see how much of the movie was accurate and what wasn't.
I was literally just thinking that,
So I can't speak 100% to how accurate the portrayals of everyone is and things like that. But even so, like, even if the portrayals aren't accurate, it's not painting them in good light.
No, all. Not at all.
We said Tonya Harding is the most sympathetic, but even so, you're not supposed to like her at the end of the movie. You're not supposed to be like, oh, she didn't deserve anything that happened to her. It's just supposed to show you what happened and show you that it's more complicated. One, it's more complicated than you thought, as life is. It was not as cut and dry. And they point out, because a lot of people, and this is something I had kind of assumed going into it, most people assume or think that Tonya Harding attacked Nancy Kerrigan. She herself went and attacked her.
Yeah.
And in the movie, they point that out right away. There's like a bunch of dummies will tell you that she did it herself. And like they laugh about it. I don't know if this whole grand conspiracy, the way it's laid out, is exactly how it went. But it was a crazy conspiracy of idiots. Have you ever seen Burn After Reading?
No, I haven't actually.
Burn After Reading is a fictional movie, but it's kind of a similar thing of a bunch of people who think they're so smart. And they're so smart, and they're breaking this conspiracy wide open, and they're actually a bunch of boobs. And that's what this movie is. It's these people who are idiots, and they think they're smart, and they think they can do so. They are capable of doing something that they're not capable of, and they fuck it up beyond all belief.
Yeah.
And everything is ruined because of it.
One of my favorite little things from this movie was, so they hire the two guys to do
we'll call it revenge.
Yeah, revenge. Without spoiling anything too much.
I mean, it's a true life event. I guess we can. You don't have to. We've already said, yeah, go.
So basically, they hire the two guys, and those guys end up doing is they're the ones who hit Nancy Kerrigan. And they find, they're like, oh, yeah, we were able to find out who these people were because the one guy was in Boston for 2 weeks at this rink, the ice rink, every single day, moving his car around every 15 minutes to make it look less suspicious. And they have the footage in the parking lot of him just pulling into one spot, backing out, pulling into another one, backing out, pulling into a different one. Every 15 minutes, like none of the other cars are moving except for his in the like hour sequence that they show where he pulls in and out four times.
Oh, it's so
and
good.
She wasn't even in Boston. She was in Detroit the whole time, which was hilarious. Like, I thought that was the funniest thing. The perfect portrayal of how stupid these guys that they had hired were.
Yeah, and that all leads back to the person we brought up a little bit earlier, like probably the most underrated actor in this movie who should be being talked about a lot more, is Paul Walter Hauser as Sean, the friend of Jeff who coordinates all this and sets it up. He is this loser piece of shit who lives at home with his parents still in his like mid-30s, who has somehow convinced people around him. I don't know, I wouldn't say he's convinced, but he tells people all the time that he is an underground agent
counterterrorism. He specializes in counterterrorism terrorism measures.
Oh my god. Yeah, and he's just this dopey guy you can tell is always like drugged up and stuff, can barely keep his eyes open. And he's always just talking nonsense, but he's the one who gets these two guys who he claims can just go down and write some nasty letters to Nancy Kerrigan and play some mind games.
Yeah,
and
then when they bring that up, he goes, I got the perfect guys.
Yeah, I got the perfect guys. And he's always super serious about it, but it does feel like pretty much no one around him believes it except for himself. But he is this just dope, and he and him too. When he gets interrogated, he falls fast.
Oh my god, the interrogation scene's hilarious. Yeah, she goes, "Where do you get this specialized?" He's like, oh, "I work in counterterrorism measures," and they're like, the reporter goes, "We actually researched this." No, you don't. And he goes, no, yeah, I'm a counterterrorism measure specialist.
it's a great bit.
And she's like, no.
he's incredible. His performance is great. He's hilarious.
He's so funny.
And the way they use him in this movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's just this big, just dumb shit. and is a perfect representation of all of those characters in this movie and just how idiotic and stupid and bad they are.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So Allison Janney, We're getting pretty close to this part, but I want to talk a little bit about Allison Janney as Lavanna, because she is something
else. She's fantastic.
Her performance is so good. She is a spitfire, man. She is one nasty woman right from the start. I like her when she takes, 4-year-old Nancy or Tanya Harding to the rink.
Yeah.
She's just smoking on the rink. She goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. We don't allow smoking on the ice." And he goes, "I'll smoke quietly then." but she is a nasty woman. And there's some pretty big blowout fights in this movie between them. Obviously, like we said, Margot Robbie got nominated for Best Actress. She got a nomination for Best Supporting. She is what a lot of people are seeing as the front runner. For that one, and it's totally understandable. She is so good in this movie. I think my favorite stuff with her, though, is her on the couch.
Yeah,
as the old lady with the oxygen and the bird on her shoulder.
Yeah,
because she's just saying some nonsense.
Oh
man.
Yeah, she's just going off.
Every time they cut to her, she's just got something ridiculous to say.
Yeah,
and Janney just crushes it.
I feel like those interviews are based off of like legitimate interviews with the pair.
I was assuming just based on the opening title card.
It feels like it's in like a 60 Minutes episode or something, because I feel like they did that at some point.
Yeah, I mean, they may have even done it for the making of this movie. I have to look into that more. Like I said, the one thing I'm a little upset I didn't get to do is a little more research on that stuff.
Yeah,
but like I said, even we didn't know like anything about this whole story going in because we weren't really around when it happened. You not at all, me, I was just a little baby. So you can go to this movie knowing nothing, and it's phenomenal. We loved every second of it. It's super entertaining, and it's a super entertaining movie about figure skating, and it's like way more entertaining than most movies that you see of this nature. Because it's got a nice twist. It's not a 2.5-hour biopic that has to go over every single detail of their life, whether it's exciting or not. It's got a nice pacing to it. They have a bunch of cool little like tricks and things they use, like breaking the fourth wall and stuff like that. That keep it feeling like it's moving real fast and you're never bogged down by anything. They're not on any set piece very long.
No.
They're moving from scene to scene pretty quickly. Nothing gets hung on too long.
Yeah, I mean the most recurring location was their house that they lived in, which really probably only had like 4 small scenes in it.
Yep. They would never stay there for that long.
Nope.
So yeah, I, Tanya, if I redid my top 20 from last year right now, it would probably most definitely be on there. It's fantastic.
It was a very fun movie. I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, great story, great acting, and a fresh take on a biopic that is at least a sports biopic. That makes you interested in something that you do not think you would be interested in.
Yeah, for something that neither you or I both really had any knowledge of before seeing the movie. It was fantastic. It did a really good job of telling the story and really entertaining us.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, go see I, Tanya while it's still in theaters. You're going to be hearing more about it at the Oscars. I'm sure it's definitely going to win something. I forget. I think it was nominated for some other stuff, but I don't remember off the top of my head what.
I was going to say, do you know if Margot Robbie was nominated?
Oh, no, she was. Yeah. Okay. I said that. She was definitely nominated because she is incredible. But with that, we're going to go from a prestige biopic movie to kind of the exact opposite, a really goofy, dumb, silly comedy.
But guys, we're staying in the same lane here. We're staying on that figure skating topic.
Yeah, well, we're staying in the figure skating lane, man. This is a figure skating episode. And we're going to talk about definitely one of your favorites, but one of our favorite dumb comedies we used to watch a lot growing up. It's 2007's Blades of Glory.
Could one of y'all pass me a biscuit?
You got another 5 miles, then you get a Luna bar.
Come on.
So, Coach, I was thinking about the music for our routine.
Really?
We're going to skate to one song only. Lady Hump by the Black Eyed Peas. What you going to do with all that junk inside my trunk? I'm going to get you drunk off my lady hump, my hump, my hump, my lovely lady hump.
I'm not skating to anything with references to lady humps. I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
It's
God, that's enough! Why do you guys keep doing that?
starring Will Ferrell. And do you guys remember him, John Heder? Remember John Heder? He played that guy, Napoleon Dynamite.
Don't talk shit about John Heder. You know what other movie he was in that was also one of my favorites?
Oh, no, don't say
Poster
it.
Still hanging up on my wall.
Don't say it.
Benchwarmers.
Oh, man. Millennials. So, for anyone who isn't familiar with this movie, do you wanna intro it? I feel like you know it better than I do.
I guess I can intro it.
Take the lead, brother.
So this movie stars your magnificent Will Ferrell that we all grew up knowing and loving in his many roles. This was a fantastic one where he starred alongside John Heder. Had another actor in it from the Western New York area, William Fichtner. So that was always cool.
Billy Fichtner, our man.
Craig Nelson as the coach. This movie follows the starts out following both Chaz Michaels, Will Ferrell, and Jimmy McElroy, who is John Heder. And they are two competitive ice skaters competing in the men's singles competitions, and they're like big rivals. And the starting scene is them fighting on the podium after they had split the gold medal and getting kicked out of figure skating.
Sound familiar, guys? So yeah, this is basically why we decided to pair these two movies up, is because once I revisited Blades of Glory before we saw Itonya, the similarities kind of were shooting right out at me. I was like, oh, maybe we should go see that before we do a Blades of Glory episode. And happy we did, because yeah, that's basically like, I mean, the I guess basis for the story of this movie, like basing it off of that real life incident, only goes about from the first 5 to 10 minutes of the movie. It's really just like you have the bad Chaz Michaels is the bad boy of figure skating, which is Tonya Harding was the bad girl of figure skating, and McElroy, who is the pretty like the goody two shoes of skating, Nancy Kerrigan was loved by everybody for being perfect and lovable.
Yep.
So their entire character dynamic is based off of those two, and then having them fight and get kicked out of figure skating for life is clearly 100%. Like, so much so, and this is when it just slaps you in the face, and you're like, well, I'm an idiot. Is in the court when they're getting judged, Nancy Kerrigan is there and Chaz Michaels hits on her.
Yeah.
Which is a great touch. So they fully based on that, which is fun, which we'll talk a little bit more as we get into it. But tell us what the rest of the movie's about after they fight and get kicked out of figure skating.
So after they get kicked out, they're all working their dead-end jobs because they have no other future. And you find out from Jimmy McElroy's stalker that there is a loophole, because the two were only banned from the events that they were competing in, which was men's singles, so they are allowed to compete in doubles. And when they go searching and look for a doubles partner, or a duos, couples, whatever you want to call it, partner, he runs into Chaz Michaels, and they get in a little fight scene, and his coach finds out that those two already have the perfect skating mechanics to be doubles partners, and they end up teaming together to be the pairs team of Chaz Michaels and Jimmy McElroy, and they go and compete in the Olympics.
Bare bones.
The winter sport games. The World Winter Sport Games is what it's called.
It's
not
funny because the description on IMDb just says the Olympics. But yeah, it's called the World Winter Sports Games because, as you said, the Olympics are awful and probably would not let them use
the logos.
There's
no way they would let them use the licensing.
Yeah, so yeah, pretty much they just team up and go and become one of the greatest skating pairs there is.
Male-male couple.
Which has never been done, and because of it, they can do some crazy shit. Which is also another thing, taking it back to Nancy Kerrigan landing the triple axel. They're doing the thing that nobody
could
ever
do. What is it called?
I can't remember.
The Iron Lotus?
The Iron Lotus.
Yeah, the Iron Lotus.
The video of it being done in North Korea. It's like, I took it to the only place crazy enough to try it. North Korea. Of course. We're going to be quoting this.
The great Will Ferrell quotes in this movie will flow from us frequently.
Yes. So the other thing we should mention is, so the biggest subplot of this movie is who they are competing against once they go to the doubles competition. And it's the pair of Strons and Fairchild von Waldenberg, played by Will Arnett and Amy Poehler, who are so good in this movie. This was one of my first introductions to them. Like, I'd probably seen Amy Poehler a little bit on SNL watching it with Dad and stuff. But it was really one of my first big introductions to the two of them.
One of my favorite quotes from Will Ferrell goes, because I don't know what's better, Strong's ass or Fairchild's legs.
Oh, it's so good. Because they're totally creepy brother and sister who skate together, which is just great. Because I feel like their characters are kind of doing a little bit what Itanya does to the institutions of figure skating, where they're just like blatantly making fun of how creepy figure skating is at times. But Chas Michael Michaels is a sex addict who can't keep it in his pants. He's ridiculous. James McAvoy has never even touched a girl.
He's a germaphobe.
Yep. So he's adopted by Bill Fichtner in the beginning of the movie. He's a kid who can, like, the best skater on the ice is like at 2 years
four,
old.
Yeah, four yeah. years old or something like that.
And because he's just a guy who adopts kids to make them into star athletes, and he turns them into a star. And then when he gets kicked out of figure skating, he literally just leaves him on the side of the road.
He says, "I'm unadopting you." He goes, "Well, technically, I think the proper term is disowning you." He's like, "But either way, I'm done."
And he just leaves on the side of the road and drives away, and that's the end of Bill Fichtner in the movie.
Yep.
Good old West Seneca boy. Love it. Super funny. And it's just this wild. I'm sure most people our age have seen this, because Will Ferrell was tour de force for a while.
This was in his heyday.
I mean, his comedies defined us growing up, because it was like, it was Anchorman, Talladega Nights, this.
This was around when I was like 10 years old. Step Brothers. This was right in the swing of puberty.
Yep. All those movies were huge for us. Because there's this a string of just goofy, ridiculous Will Ferrell comedies. And this was getting a little more towards the end of it, I guess, or maybe it was right in the middle. But it is definitely one of the goofiest.
And one of the less vulgar, which is why I was able to watch it over and over and over again at such a young age.
Less vulgar, but still quite vulgar. Like we said, Chas Michael Michaels is a sex addict. Yeah. And there are some great scenes with that. One of my favorite being the one between him and Jenna Fischer, who plays the sister of Franz Strons and Fairchild, Katie, where she has to try and have sex with him for her siblings. Yeah. And he's just grabbing her boobs, and he's like, "I don't want to do this." He's like, "You don't want to do this?" He's like, "Oh, my God, thank God." And then John Heder walks in. Impure! Impure! It's great. It's so funny. I think this is the funniest John Heder's ever been.
Yeah, I love him. This is fantastic.
He was a very blink and you'll miss him moment. Obviously, he'll be remembered forever for Napoleon Dynamite, but he's pretty much been gone for a while now. We haven't seen him in anything, at least major, in a long time. But he's a time capsule actor, the way I see it. Like, he is funny, but you watch like any movies and it takes you right back to when it came out. It's is from the mid to early 2000s.
Yes. I don't know if I'm looking up right now to see if he's been in anything since like 2007.
I do love...
It looks like he's done a bunch of TV, but...
Oh, there you go.
I mean, the most recent thing was technically Surf's Up 2, but isn't that a
WWE movie?
No, Surf's Up.
Click it. I'm pretty sure it was like produced by the WWE, and there's a bunch of wrestlers.
You're right.
Yeah, no, I was not kidding.
Well, Chicken Joe's in it, so he had to voice it. But yeah, John Cena's in it. Wow,
I'm pretty sure it ended up being produced by the WWE.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it's crazy. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah.
We love Surf's Up, but I don't know about that sequel, man. It's so random.
I don't know.
It's a surfing movie, though. Like, it had nothing to do with wrestling. How did that get get taken by the WWE? It was like, we're going to turn the sequel to this decade-old, not that successful animated comedy and turn it into a wrestling animated comedy? Question mark. It's wild. Yeah. It's wild. But I don't know.
John Heder, literally, I think I think Blaze of Glory is the last major thing he was in.
Damn. And you know what? He's probably one of the even weaker comedic talents in this because you have Will Ferrell, Will in that, Amy Poehler, Jenna Fischer, Craig T. Nelson, Romani Malco is great as the choreographer, Nick Swardson. This is in the heyday of Nick Swardson.
Yeah, no, Nick Swardson was fantastic.
I didn't know that. He does a voice in Monster House. I forgot about that. He is. Do you know who he is?
No.
He is the crusty nerd playing the video game at the pizza place that they to find out how to exercise
the
house.
Of course he was the nerd.
Yep.
It's John Heder. He played Napoleon Dynamite, for God's sakes.
Well, you know what? One of my favorite little roles is in this movie.
What's that?
Rob Corddry.
You
poaching my skaters, bro?
As the Grumblitz on Ice manager.
Yep. You poaching my skaters, bro?
That Grumblitz on Ice, that little scene there was
his
fantastic.
His breakdown? Oh, my God. Chaz Michael Michaels' breakdown?
Yeah.
Where he threw, I just threw up in my helmet.
He goes,
that's the reality of it.
Hey, everybody, this is my friend, Gary the Squirrel. Me and Gary, one time, we were at a bus stop outside of Tucson, and he just throws up.
Yeah, this vomit, filling up my helmet. That's the reality of it.
Oh my God, he's so fantastic. That whole scene. I like the scene where he's in his like green room with the Woodland Fairies, and his girlfriend comes in and she goes, "Are you kidding me?" And he like chases her, and he goes, she's like, "Come on, this is." He goes, "This is what you signed up for when you met me." And she goes, "No, when I signed up for you, you were a great figure skater." And he goes, "You're living in the past." He's like, "Me and the Woodland Fairies are living in the here and now. Come on, join us."
Oh, it's so great. Will Ferrell, endlessly quotable in this movie.
He's so great.
Pretty much everything that comes out of his mouth. Is that mane and tail? His whole thing with the brush. And that whole scene in that cabin, that whole like sequence of stuff. Yeah. Give me some chicken. And we're just get to one song only. Lady Humps by the Black Eyed Peas. What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside that trunk. Could you junk up a Lady Humps?
I'm not skating to any song that refers to Lady Humps.
What does that even mean? No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
One of the great jokes in that is when he just walks in immediately, he goes, "Don't take your boots off before you set foot on the Berber." And he goes, "Why would I step in baby food?" And Jimmy McElroy just goes, "He's talking about the carpet, dumbass."
It's Berber, not Gerber. We were talking about some of our most favorite like lines we quote in everyday talk, and definitely one of them is "No one knows what it means, but it's provocative." Yeah. That's my response to many things. I just love that whole sequence. There's a chicken.
There's some great quotes in this. One of my other favorites. He goes, "This ends tonight, McElroy." And he goes, "It's daytime, you douche." And of course, I can't, if we're talking about quotes, I can't let this one go because my senior quote was from Blades of Glory. And that would be, they're going out to do their first competition as the first male-male duo to skate. And he goes, they skate out there and Jimmy McElroy, they're getting ready position. And he goes, "They're laughing at us." And, Will Ferrell goes, "They laughed at Louis Armstrong when he said he wanted to go to the moon. Now he's up there laughing at them." And then they go right into their scene.
His stupidity is amazing.
It's so fantastic.
It's so good. He plays a confident idiot better than anyone I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely. And it's impressive, honestly.
Oh, he's
in
so
every
good.
Movie, he's a confident idiot. Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, this movie, like any movie you can think of. That
confident idiot. Rod Burgundy is a confident idiot.
That is all he
is. And he does it so perfectly. He really does. I love when they're at the sentencing hearing early in the movie and they're giving their defenses. And Chaz McElroy, Maxim Magazine, 2005. Chaz Michael Michaels is figure skating. and that's his whole defense. And then people start cheering and clapping for him because he's got his own posse of girls with him in there.
I just love how there's like a crowd in the courtroom with him. Oh my God. This movie is just endlessly quotable and will stick with me forever. Because before I rewatch this, I probably hadn't seen it in like over 5 years, and I could literally recite word for word the movie. I was like, wow, I used to watch this a lot.
Yep. And you, one thing I really love in this movie is you get some good physical comedy out of Will Ferrell, especially.
Yes.
Whether it be in the skating scenes. I like just like the simple scene when he comes down in his towel. He goes, drinking in McElroy. This is what a skater's body really looks like. And he's just got like ultimate dad bod. And then the whole final chase season scene with him and Will Arnett.
Yes.
Is some amazing physical comedy and has one of my favorite jokes in it when he kills Snowflake. You killed Snowflake! He shoots a freaking mascot in the head with a crossbow. It's just like that the escalator where they click in their skates to the escalator and they can't move and they just, he just like looks back at him and they just start trash talking each other.
It's another Will Ferrell escalator scene.
Two. Oh yeah.
Number two.
Oh dude.
Behind Elf.
Yeah, yeah. And he's great. And Will Arnett is great.
Yeah.
It's got a bang up cast of people who were either huge then or were gonna be huge. It was Will Ferrell, John Heder, Eddie Poehler, Will Arnett, Jenna Fisher. William Fichtner, dude, he is blown up recently. He's been in a lot of stuff, and he was in Buffalo for a while because he was filming his directorial debut here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so he's getting behind the camera. He's very much embraced his hometown roots in recent years. It all started when he did that Bills commercial.
Yeah, I was going to say, it definitely started when he did that Bills commercial.
And ever since, he's been doing a lot here. Like, he lit up. We were taking pictures at my friend's wedding at the History Museum. Yeah. And he was in there like setting up for an event that night and came out and took pictures with them.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's cool dude. But he's good in a little bit he has in this. I love seeing, he's like I said, guy who was just a small little bit character actor then is really blown up. Craig T. Nelson as the coach is great.
Yes.
Obviously anytime Mr. Incredible is hanging around, we're all very happy.
Just the voice alone. Oh my God. One of his quotes. Will Ferrell's on the treadmill because he said nobody can lift your fat ass. But he's on the treadmill and he goes, I need some food. And he goes, 5 more miles and you get a Luna bar.
Yeah,
and that classic Mr. Incredible voice.
Oh, you also get a great millennial cameo from William Daniels. Peter.
Oh yes. Peter. Oh yes. Fantastic.
The commissioner. The commissioner who gives them their hearing in the beginning of the movie. And I feel like that's like one of the last things we saw him in.
Yeah. So now I want to look at that. I don't know what Feeny was in after that.
Oh, the great Feeny. Everybody loves Feeny. There's a show I need to get back to at some point.
I'm sure we'll do a Boy Meets World episode.
And another one, there'll definitely be an Incredibles episode coming up. So everyone, stay tuned for that.
Yep, that'll be.
There's a certain movie coming out this year that we're excited for.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. So more about Blades of Glory, because we love Blades of Glory, and it's so fun.
Oh, my God. I honestly could keep going for a long time.
It's just, I don't know. I get the people. I don't know if I get the people, but there's people who don't like these type of Will Ferrell comedies. And if you don't like these movies, you're not going to like Blades of Glory.
You just don't like Will Ferrell at this point.
Yeah, because he's
confident idiot.
This is him at his silliest and like just kind of going for some ridiculous shit.
Oh, they're going for it in this movie.
And it's out there and it's wild, but man, it's funny. I love it. It's just ridiculous. And actually, another connection to the Tonya Harding thing that clicked with me at the towards the end of I, Tonya, is the final competition in Blades of Glory. He shows up last second. Like, he's got 30 seconds, and that's literally is what is going on in the end of I, Tonya. And that's all I could think about when we were in I, Tonya. I was like, this is the end of Blades of Glory. They just synced it up. It's amazing.
It's cool that they pulled a bunch of, like, cultural relevance from that.
Well, it makes the movie make a lot more sense now. Yeah. Honestly, like
that was the biggest event figure skating had ever seen. So
Will Ferrell making a figure skating comedy just seems so random at the time because we didn't know this.
Yeah,
no. I'm sure to the people who knew about it, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, they're making a satirical comedy, kind of using that as a basis.
I mean,
as a launching point. But like,
that's weird that they must have had that script looming around for a while.
I could totally. This is something I should look into. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like a script about that incident or something that they transformed into a comedy.
That's very possible.
Stuff like that happens all the time. They take a serious script and take like the bare bones of it and then turn it into a just totally different thing.
For sure.
But it all works. It's super fun. I think it's funnier now that we know all of that stuff. I kind of like it more. It's Will Ferrell at his goofiest. What's not to love here?
Yeah, I just looked it up. The budget on this movie was $61 million.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Really?
Yeah, But they made their money back even more so because they made almost $150 million.
That was the thing. So, like, mid-2000s, you can make a $60 million
comedy.
Will Ferrell comedy because you knew it was going to bring in $100 million-plus at the box office. That's crazy, though.
That's wild.
Man, that is wild.
This was an MTV movie, too. Don't forget about that.
There you go.
Well, the opening scene, you get that classic astronauts in the movie theater shot.
Yep. Yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, they do a good job with the figure skating scenes. Like, they don't look cheesy. They look really nice and well done. So they probably just went shot for the moon with all that stuff.
And DreamWorks and MTV.
There you go. Well, that means it's technically a Spielberg produced movie.
Interesting.
Because DreamWorks is Spielberg's company. Was Spielberg's company.
Yeah, this movie is just it's so fun.
It's funny. If you haven't seen it. I'm kind of surprised. I don't know. It's like I feel like all those Will Ferrell movies, everybody saw him because he was just so big at the time. Anchorman and Step Brothers made him larger than life, and anything he would see, people wanted to check, or he was in, people wanted to check out.
Yeah, this I'm gonna look up now to see how long after, like Step Brothers and like how close these movies were all jumbled together. Because I feel like this had to have been right in his heyday, around just before the turn of the
yeah, it definitely
the decade
was.
There.
Because Anchorman was earlier in 2000s, and that was kind of like the launching pad for like the craziness. And then you had Talladega Nights, and then I want to say this might have predated Step Brothers.
I think it did, because I definitely feel like I was older than 11 when Step Brothers came out.
Yeah. Stupid Wi-Fi. Not loading. Yeah, no, I'm pretty confident that it came after Blades of Glory. But, yeah, it was the year before. Step Brothers was 2008. Blades of Glory 07. So they were right. I mean, back to back.
Yeah, that's
right. That's what it was. You had, like, Will Ferrell movies coming out every year. Every
I was
going to
say, those are two hits, too, right in a row, which is actually really impressive.
So, yeah, I don't know. We've always loved this movie. We like all of Talladega Nights, Anchorman, Step Brothers especially. It's like that run of four that like you just can't touch. You can throw Old School in there too.
He had a good run going for a bit there.
Yeah, he did. He was crushing.
2003 was Old School and Elf, and then it went into Anchorman in 2004. I mean, you could say Kicking and Screaming 2005.
There's a future episode.
2006, Talladega Nights. 2007, Blades of Glory, obviously.
Holy shit.
2008 was Semi-Pro Step Brothers. Like, And then Land of the Lost, 2009.
All right, people hate Land of the Lost. We fucking love
Land of the
Lost.
And the other guys is 2010.
Damn.
Like, damn. He had a good run there for
what was
like
that,
5 years.
That was a seven-year
run.
7 years,
yeah.
Wow.
He definitely made all his money then because there's a bunch of other shit in there.
Man, that's like an ultimate. Most comedians get like three movies that are great, and then it's like diminishing returns. That dude had like almost a decade of just like crushing and making us laugh.
Yeah.
So hard.
And even Megamind was 2010 as well, which our dad loves.
I like Megamind.
I like Megamind too.
Fun.
Yeah.
It's a cool movie. He does some fun voice acting work because obviously he's Professor Business. Is that what he's called?
In Lego
Movie.
Yes,
he's really great in that.
So,
aka dad, but. Spoilers. Yeah, we love Will Ferrell. Love this movie. I'm sure you'll be hearing us talk about other ones that we name dropped in this episode down the line.
Yeah,
absolutely. Played a huge part in our.
Will
in
Ferrell our, was a big yeah. part of a childhood, especially with our sister Tori. She loves Will Ferrell just as much as us, if not probably even more. Honestly,
yeah. She big part
She's
of our.
She's a huge
of our
Will Ferrell fan.
Yeah, so you'll hear a lot more about that. So yeah, I guess that about wraps this one up, right? We got everything I think we need to say out there.
I feel like we threw a lot of info out.
We don't just need to keep quoting the movie for these people. They can see it themselves. We could do that ourselves all day. So next week is going to be our second part of this Winter Olympics thing. We have a whole bunch cool shit that we're going to watch and talk about. And
we could throw some of the titles out right now. If we
Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings.
Eddie the Eagle.
Cool Runnings is like the big one from our past.
Yes, because we watched. I've watched that dozens
a million
of
times.
Yeah.
You would think I'm quoting a lot now. Wait till you hear me talking about Cool Runnings. Yes, Eddie the Eagle, a newer movie,
which I've actually never seen. So
great.
This will be a good first watch for me.
We'll have a lot to talk about that. Miracle, Miracle. I just threw this one in there because I remembered it.
Yeah, very good call.
Gonna do Miracle, and that one was definitely one we watched growing up.
Yeah, I mean, so many of our friends were hockey dudes, so we watched that with them and also in our own house, obviously.
Do we have any other movies?
Movies, I don't think so.
Okay.
But the big one. Not really.
No, but it's fun for us.
Yeah, it's a good one for us. That would be the video game. I want to say it was Salt Lake City. Winter Olympics, PlayStation 2 video game.
Yes. No,
I think it was it was Salt Lake City.
Was it? No, but I think it was for a computer.
No, it was PlayStation 2. I still have the console.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I still have the disc.
Okay. Yeah, it was just a fun little Winter Olympics game they made when the Winter Olympics were around 1 year, and our dad got it for us.
No, it was our Uncle Bobby got it. He got it, yeah.
And we would bobsled and do the ski jump. So we're going to talk a bunch about that. We'll save that for next week. But, yeah, that's going to be a fun little thing we're going to talk about. And I'm sure they've made other games around the Winter Olympics, but we're going to specifically talk about that one. Yeah. And just our general – we'll get more into our just general love of the Winter Olympics next week.
Doing these topics makes me realize how much of an impact the Winter Olympics actually had on me.
Oh, dude, I was just talking about this at work yesterday with John. I'm so excited for the Winter Olympics, man. I'm so excited to watch some bobsledding, some snowboarding, some
skiing. I think the Jamaicans are back this year.
Hell, yes. I think I did see that.
Did you? There's another new bobsledding team this year. Really? I want to say it's somewhere from Africa.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God.
Did you see?
I think it might be Nigeria.
That would be awesome.
I think it's what it was.
Brief little story I want to just say before we end this episode. Leave you guys on a good note going into the Olympics. So, did you see the girl that made the U.S. Olympic speed skating team?
The girl, who was this, what was she?
She hadn't started speed skating until like 6 months ago.
I thought it was like 3 months before qualifying.
3 months before qualifying, she's a roller derby girl.
Roller derby, yeah. That's what it was.
So awesome.
That's so cool.
So cool. Roller derby girl picks up the sport in 3 months, qualifies, is now going to the Olympics for the U.S.
Which is, yeah, that's skating. Such a cool story.
Yeah, so awesome.
Stuff like that, it's like, okay, good for these people. They deserved it.
That one,
like,
that's so cool. Especially if she medals, but even if not, I bet you that story's a movie one day.
Yeah, I could see it.
I could see it. Roller derby girl.
I guarantee you she's got some crazy stories about roller derby.
See, if you do roller derby, you got an interesting life. I'm going to assume you have an interesting life if you do roller derby.
I've always wanted to, because they do the roller derby at the Buffalo River Works. I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, we got
to
check it out sometime.
Dude, I've heard it's fucking wild.
We'll have to do that. We'll have to go check it out sometime and get some drinks and stuff. All right, so look forward to that Olympics episode next week. And then we have another winter-centric episode coming after that we'll spill the beans on at the end of the next episode.
Yes.
But until then, I'm Zach Kendron.
I'm Lucas Kendron.
And we'll talk to you guys next time. Never could believe the
things you do to me. 4.8.
How do I get a fair shot here?
We also judge on presentation.
Suck my dick.
We're gonna need it even the playing field. I know a guy. Shouldn't even be saying his name. Derek.
The press wanted me to be the pile of crap.
I never did this.
What is going on?
We're with the FBI.
They know something.
What can you tell us about Tonya Harding?
I don't know a Tony Harding.
Aren't you her bodyguard?
When I was a kid, did you ever love me?
I made you a champion, knowing you'd hate me for it. That's the sacrifice a mother makes.
You cursed me. America, they want someone to love, but they want someone to hate.
I mean, come on! What kind of friggin' person bashes in their friend's knee? Who would do that to a friend?
Stop that.